Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor and star of the 1991 season 6 episode 2 of LA Law, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong.
When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.
How do you like that one?
That was good. LA Law.
LA Law. I'm just pulling deep as far as deep as I can go.
You really are.
Did you have fun on LA Law?
I did. I had a really great time. One of the producers on the show, Elodie Keene was her name. She directed the episode. And I've known Elodie ever since then.
Wow.
A wonderful director, and directed at a time when there weren't a lot of female directors.
Correct.
So it was great to work with Elodie, and LA Law was filled with lots of drama and big, court cases. Yeah. And so I had some nice scenes in that. It was fun. I had a good time. That was a big hit back then too.
It was a massive show. Who were your scenes with Corbin Burnson, or who did you have most of your scenes
with? I can't remember. I can't remember which lawyers I had. I don't know, but it was two brothers. I could totally be wrong about this. It was two brothers fighting over the estate of their parents, two adult brothers. And I think I was the younger brother, and I can't remember what the what they wanted to do with the estate, but there was a lot of emotion about, the parents and their relationship as brothers and things like that. It was good. It was fun.
You had a positive experience working on LA.
A very positive experience.
Okay, good.
It was at Fox. It was filmed at 20th Century Fox Studios over near Century City. And this was in the early 90s where Fox had not renovated that studio. So it was kind of dumpy over there. It was very old school. And, I've worked there since, and they've got all kinds of new buildings and all kinds of crazy stuff. But back then,
No.
It was kind of a dump, I remember. But yeah, it was fun. LA Law.
Okay. All right. Hey, you have something to show us?
Show and tell? So we had, Rebecca and I had a couple of friends of ours, Nova and Molly. Two of our friends came to visit us, and we were talking about what they do. They're publishers of a book. And the book is called Classics, But Make It Gay. Mm. And it's classic art from art history that they reimagine with, works like ancient Greek works or Norman Rockwell works or all kinds of things. But they imagine it with LGBTQ or people of color.
Yeah.
Non-traditional, kinds of images. And it's the kind of thing that just seems to fit into the Star Trek sort of universe in terms of diversity. And,
And infinite diversity and infinite combinations. Yeah. IDIC. I think that's a very cool idea. They did all the artwork on this. Is that them?
Commissioned artists. Mm-hmm. I'm showing if you're a Patreon member, some of the work, but it's classic art. It's really just beautiful stuff. And I love the fact that they find ways for people who identify in a non-traditional way, they can see themselves. They can see themselves in these works of art. And I just think it's really beautiful. It touched my heart. It's inspiring. And I will say that, if you want to check out the books, they have a website. It is novaandmally.com. And I'm going to spell it. That's NovaandMally.com. NovaandMally.com. Check out their book. It's really cool. I found it really inspiring, and it just felt like something that our fans would be interested in. So check it out.
Yeah. And it looks like something that would look very nice on a coffee table. It looks like something that's very classy looking, and belongs in a front and center in someone's coffee table.
So. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful book. The art that they commissioned from lots of emerging and young artists. It's just beautiful work. It's really beautiful work.
Looks great. Anyway. Okay, check it out, everybody. All right, let's talk about this week's episode. It is Course Oblivion. Course Oblivion. What a name.
Sounds very important.
It sounds very important.
Very ominous.
All right. So, Robbie, let's go ahead and watch this episode, and we'll come back with our recap and discussion. And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Hey, everyone, we're back from watching Course Oblivion.
Course Oblivion. It was not the comedy that I remember.
No, it's not.
It's not funny.
But boy, I guessed right. Oh my God.
I can't believe you remembered Anson Williams directed.
I don't remember it. It was a shot in the dark. I know this. The prior episode was Livingston. So I felt if this was aired correctly right. in the shooting order, this would not be Livingston again. So I said it's not Livingston. And like I said, I thought it would be Cliff, I would say Cliff Ball, but we already established he has retired. And then you threw Craker out, which was going to be my choice. So then I thought, all right, if he's going with Craker, I'll pick Anson, because that's the only name. I was going to say Terry Wendell, but I thought, it feels more possibly like it could be Anson than Terry. And I was right on the money.
Oh, bullseye. Gosh. Good job.
So excited to see that. All right, here we go with my haiku for Course Oblivion.
Yes.
Haiku poetry synopsis. 2 years left till home. Ship and crew start to degrade. Real crew finds nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a sad haiku, like a sad episode. It is.
It's a sad episode. Gosh. All right. Let's hear the limerick.
All right. Here's the limerick, our poetry synopsis for Course Oblivion.
Okay.
We start off with a fun and happy wedding. But they're copies with a gooey disease spreading. B'Elanna dies. Tom almost cries. Chakotay's death makes Janeway futilely change their heading.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. We got everything in there.
And we got it covered. Good job.
In fact, we got the part where Tom almost cries. I got to be honest. I hated my performance in this episode.
Wow.
I'm just going to say.
Let's not talk about it here. Let's get to it when we get to that scene.
I'm saying in the whole episode.
Oh my gosh.
I'm saying in the whole episode, I feel like I was off. I was all over the place.
Ah, man. Well, we're often the most critical of our own performances, and I'm definitely guilty of that. And you're definitely guilty of that. Because I honestly I didn't sit there and think that there was, and it didn't pull me out.
Really?
No, it really didn't. So
I would say that not only was I critical of my performance, but some of our fellow castmates, I felt like the thing I was critical about was I felt like continuity wise, like in terms of a smooth journey of, making sure that I was tracking where I was coming from, going to the levels of things. I feel like I was just like shooting scenes as we shot them, and I wasn't connecting the dots very well. And I felt that way a little bit with some of the rest of the cast. Like within scenes, sometimes some actors were playing one sort of tone and other actors were playing a different tone. And to me, it felt a little lacking in focus and continuity in terms of performances.
Okay.
That was just my general wash of the episode.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Interesting enough, we don't have a single guest star on this episode, which is very rare for us to not have a single guest star.
I know. And normally I would be like, oh, it's focused on our cast. Everybody's got something to do, which is true. That's usually like a slam dunk. That's going to be a great episode for me. Mm-hmm. But for me, this one, because of the lack of consistency and the lack of the fact that we were all playing the same tone in the same scenes.
Okay.
I feel like it was a little all over the place for me.
All right.
That's again, general, very general.
You are entitled to that opinion. Okay. Mm-hmm. So teleplay by Brian Fuller and Nick Sagan, story by the talented Brian Fuller. Mm-hmm. And directed by Anson Williams. We got
I still can't believe you remembered that. Yes, it's an interesting concept. Mm-hmm. This idea of telling a story that we think is about our characters when really it's the copies from a previous episode. I love That's the right. concept, but it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one because we're sort of, as soon as we realize that in this episode, to me, I'm like, oh, well, this isn't our real characters. So how invested am I?
Yeah.
Like if I know that they're not, if they're copies and we don't yeah. know the journey since they were created. Once we realize we put the pieces together, we're like, oh, well, they're not the real people that we've come to watch all these adventures with.
Right.
They're copies and they've had their own adventures that we've never seen.
That we didn't even. Yes. So this could be the spinoff.
Yeah.
This could be the spinoff show, right? Star Trek Voyager mimetic copies.
Mm-hmm.
I will say Harry is really a copy of a copy.
I know. I thought of that
too. Did you think about that? So maybe that's why Harry was still alive at the very end, because he was a copy of a copy. I don't know. Maybe that. I don't know. I have no clue why Harry stayed to the very end with Seven and Neelix and everyone else died before them. I'm not
even
sure
the
why.
Doctor.
Yeah. Even the doctor's gone. Exactly.
Well, they did say at one point early on, the doctor says the people that were closest to the warp core seem to be getting sick quicker. He said that when B'Elanna first, when he had his first few patients, he's like, so maybe the people that were around the warp core more.
But then how would that explain Chakotay going so quickly? Like he's never near there.
And Seven was in the, by the warp core all the time.
She should have been, she should have been one of the earliest ones to go after B'Elanna. So it's a little, so there, it's not even consistent there either, you know?
Well,
so
that's what I'm saying.
Okay, there's some inconsistencies.
Consistency.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's talk about the very first opening scene. We're in the mess hall. This is Tom's wedding, Tom's wedding. And why isn't everyone in dress uniform? Why are
we just weird? It's just
you notice
the
that just the principles. Yes. It's like, well, wait a minute.
First of all, I thought we saw Harry's first. Okay. So the wedding,
we see
where it's some kind of celebration. We don't really know what's going on as the thing opens, but the camera pans over and there's Harry playing some music on his clarinet with some other musicians. And Harry is in this weird outfit. The dress uniform, which I thought looked like his marching band uniform. I was like, oh, he's in his band camp uniform. Okay.
That's what you thought when you first saw that?
At first, I was like, why is he wearing his band camp uniform?
Okay.
Anyway, so he's playing some music. And then we see the doctor taking pictures with the biggest camera I've seen since.
It's that holo-imager again.
Yeah, say hi to the 1970s for me. It was so big. I remember when
we
shot this
scene. Bigger than a Polaroid camera.
It's
I was like,
so
what?
Big.
Yes.
And I remember when we shot the scene.
Yeah.
I remember commenting, like people were even commenting when we shot it in 99 or whatever year this was.
Yeah.
We were like, this is big even for them. It's huge.
Okay. Yeah, it is. My only note about this scene is that I am the most comfortable playing the clarinet in this scene than any other time playing the clarinet. I felt that I'd finally felt completely at
it
ease with that instrument, you know.
Well, even when you play, then there's the ceremony, and then when you go back over to play again, they like toss you the clarinet.
The guy on the
smooth.
My other musician, he just throws it at me and I catch it out of midair and I start playing.
Oh, it was very cool. Yeah, very smooth.
That must have been, I'm just wondering if that was a
directorial.
Maybe Anson was like, let's spice this up a little bit.
I bet that was a you call. I would say, like, hey,
you think
just
I
toss
brought
it to
that?
Me. Yeah,
throw it to me.
Definitely. I have to quote one line in the scene
congratulations.
When the doctor says to Seven, something about the wedding, and Seven's response is, given the volatile nature of the relationship, one might have predicted homicide rather than matrimony. I love that line.
I don't remember hearing that line. The line I wrote down was after she caught the bouquet, and then you hear congratulations, and Seven goes, for what? And Tuvok says, you may not know. He says, you may not want to know.
Yes, right? That was funny.
That was
this,
funny.
This scene, actually, I was like, I had fun with this scene, actually. I thought the wedding, all the characters were fun.
Yeah.
The energy was light and fun and happy. And I felt like everybody was relaxed and playing the scene really well.
And then it's just ruined by the floor distorting. Yeah, the carpet's distorting and the rice.
The rice falling through the
floor.
The warping floor, exactly. So great scene that ends with this jeopardy that we're like, what's going on?
What the heck? What the heck? Yeah. Did you know what was happening at that point?
No.
Okay. All right.
I didn't remember.
Okay.
We have a captain's log. Captain says, with all the celebrating, we have lots to celebrate. We've got crewman Harper's new baby. So there was a baby born.
Yeah, baby.
We have this new warp drive, she says, and we're really 2 years from home. We're super close. Then we go into her ready room. She's talking with Chakotay about they're only 2 years from home. And did you notice Kate Mulgrew's sort of touching of Robert Beltran? And she had her finger on his chest and was sort of like, I thought, JC moment is happening right now.
Yeah, it is. Now, I just want to step back a little bit to that captain's log. And you're talking about, you know, her saying that a baby was born. Now, I'm trying to think about this. The only way that anyone is alive is they are a mimetic compound copy of the original. So wouldn't the baby
have a baby?
Exactly.
Interesting.
It's like that doesn't make sense to me. Like you would have to be a mimetic compound of a baby that's already in existence. Like how could two mimetic compounds actually create a real child? That's
interesting. I did not catch that.
That's something that I just caught just now in in this conversation that we've had, but all right, let's move on. So like we said, we're in the ready room again. It's 2 years, 11 days, 6 hours away from actually getting back to the Alpha Quadrant because of this enhanced warp drive. Now, were you thinking that this is something like when you're watching, were you like, wait a minute, why, how's this happening? Like,
I felt like we definitely had missed something.
Okay. Yeah.
But I was like, I couldn't remember the episode. So I was like, oh, well, they'll fill us in on what we missed.
Right.
Because we do jump time.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
That's
a huge
jump. big jump. Well, how do we get this super duper warp drive where we're going home in 2 years? We jump to the mess hall and Neelix is now suggesting honeymoon locations to Paris to go on the holodeck. And he's got these awesome, very exotic places to go to, different, you know, places in our galaxy, our universe. And then, you know, Tom is like, I don't know. I think Earth has the best vacation spots, especially 1920s Chicago. And so, you know, this is it's a nice scene. It's cute. Yes. It's good.
It's cute. It's cute.
Yeah,
it's cute. He goes into a lot of detail about Chicago. Tom really knows his 20th century history.
He does.
But he sets that up, which will come back later when he's talking to B'Elanna about the Chicago honeymoon. Mm-hmm. We go into engineering next, and B'Elanna's filling Seven in on what needs to be done while she's on her honeymoon.
Yeah.
And B'Elanna says to Seven, I've never been away from engineering for more than a couple of days.
Yep.
Certainly not a week.
Right.
So this is, she's very reluctant to leave
her little baby.
She even talks about the warp drive having a personality. Like Seven, it's not just a device. This has got a personality. And you may think you know all the data, but you don't know its personality. There's an alert, a minor fluctuation in the subsidiary injector ports. And Seven says, I'll take care of it. And Balon's like, no, let me come with you. I grabs her bag and off they go.
Still 20 minutes on her duty shift. So
that's right.
Yeah, she's still into it. They're in the Jeffries tube and they open up one section and they notice that the entire Jeffries tube in that section is losing molecular cohesion. This is a big problem. We go to the briefing room and we discover it's our warp field. The enhanced drive is emitting some form of subspace radiation, and that is affecting Voyager's infrastructure. And not only Voyager, but we soon learn everyone's infrastructure is being affected by this subspace radiation.
And B'Elanna and Seven are sort of explaining this to the room. I did notice in the scene in the briefing room, the difference between directors. You know, like I kept thinking about Alan Craker in directing scenes in the briefing room and how there was just energy and movement. And then I thought about David Livingston and his sort of wide lenses and sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, a bit forced in the blocking, yeah. but yeah. but still his style. This one felt very simplistic to me, this briefing scene. I don't know how else to okay. put it. I felt like, yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
You know, it didn't feel like the photography matched the jeopardy that was being set up. And in fact, at the end, Janeway dismisses the crew and then Chakotay walks over. And this was the beginning of, I also noticed in this episode, a lot of these long pauses at ends of scenes. Because Chakotay walks over, she's dismissed the crew. Janeway and Chakotay stand there in front of the monitor. And you see, you even see Kate start to go, like she's about to say something and then is speechless. Uh-huh. And it just, it lingers on. And I was like, that's an odd moment. Like, why didn't they cut out of this faster? It doesn't, it just doesn't feel like a dramatic, oh my God, kind of moment or what's happening or I don't know.
I mean, do you have ideas of how you would have shot it then in terms of to increase the, escalate the tension?
Well, I think if they're going to stand there silently, the camera should be moving. I mean, this was a Rick Berman quote, you know, from way back when. I remember
moving pictures. It's moving pictures.
Yep. And if the actors aren't moving, the camera should be moving. And if, you know, the camera's not moving, then the actors mm-hmm. should be moving. And this was one of those moments where I was like, no, there's just two people standing there and nothing's and it's awkward. It's going on a little too long, but
okay. Where are we now? We're in Balanas. Well, actually, yeah, we go to both of your quarters, right?
Don't you guys? It is now that we're married in this story. Balana goes in. She's leaving a log.
She basically says in her chief engineer's log supplemental that she can't figure out what is wrong. She's run all these different diagnostics, and she has not figured out why we're losing this type of cohesion. And then she goes into the washroom area. That's how
she gets the chills.
Oh, that's right. That's right. She gets.
She's like, ooh, all of a sudden, she suddenly gets the chills. And she's like, computer, raise the temperature by 5 degrees.
That's right.
And then she goes in. Now, one thing I want to comment on this is, again, it's going to sound like I'm piling on this episode, but I struggled in this one.
Okay.
So she gets the chills suddenly. And now she's starting to have the effects of this thing.
Right.
But I didn't see any other characters start to get the chills. I didn't see. Like there was a lack of consistency.
Like everyone should be freezing then, right?
Yeah, they don't have to all get this disease simultaneously, but when they do, there should be steps that happen for each of them where you kind of go, oh no, somebody just got the chills.
Right.
Now they're gonna it felt a little lacking in continuity.
Okay.
But anyway, right. She goes into the mirror, into the bathroom. And suddenly her face starts moving.
So the distortions are happening now in her cheek. So now we see the same thing that happened in the Jeffries tube is now happening to her cheek. And we jump to the corridor where we have a scene with Tom and Harry, buddy-buddy, kind of joking around. And
talking about married life.
Exactly. Harry drops off Tom at Tom and Bellana's quarters, and he enters to find a bent-over Torres, who's now in major pain, and he takes her to sick bay. We enter sick bay, and the doctor says that we're dealing with an epidemic. This is acute cellular degradation. So every part of our cells are just part of her cells are now degrading. And there are a couple of other patients there. And it just turns out that these patients are also from engineering. And that's where we get this theory of those closest to the warp core are affected first.
And he also, the doctor scans Janeway while they're talking. And he does say, this is going to happen to everyone.
Yeah, everyone's going to get infected.
Including the captain, he says.
That's
to her,
right.
And I noticed in this scene, it was all shot through that curved glass in the doctor's office. And I remember early on how hard we struggled to shoot, to look that direction because of the reflection. You remember that? Like, because that curved glass, you would either see the camera or the crew or lights or something. But I thought this just reminded me of how by the time we got into the show a few seasons in, the reflections were not an issue anymore. Like they figured out, I don't know how they did it. I don't know if they hung the lights or I remember sometimes the camera crew would wear black clothes and they drape black like fabric over them so that they would not, you couldn't you know, tell what you were seeing in the reflection.
So you actually remember a time when the reflection sort of subsided, where we didn't have that many issues?
I remember early on it was hard. Like, yeah, we would take hours sometimes to figure out how to shoot a scene.
My memory is that we've dealt with that issue for the entire 7 years. Maybe I'm wrong, but I always recall, like, everyone was so, you know, that was the number one thing. Are there reflections? Yep. Not only in that room, but anywhere else that we shot, everything was always like, hey, are there any reflections? Are there any reflections? And there was always issues that we had to deal with. But yeah, if you recall that,
I remember it getting better. Okay. It was always an issue, but they kind of figured out
how to get around it. Yeah.
How to get around it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now we're in mess hall and Neelix is showing Tuvok and Chakotay everything that was brought on board that wasn't.
By the way, did you notice when the door opened and Tuvok and Neelix enter, Chakotay's coming in behind them?
Yeah.
As they walk through the door on the right side of the frame, there was this thing. For a second, I had to pause it. I looked at it. I was like, is that a drinking fountain?
What?
It's not a drinking fountain, but there's like a side table and it had something like a metal thing on it or something. It looked like a drinking fountain to me. I was like, wow, I don't remember a drinking fountain on the ship, but it was not a drinking fountain.
Is that in your video reaction?
I don't think so.
Okay. Man. All right. I didn't see that. Did not catch that. But anyway, yeah. Neelix is just showing, you know, all the things that were brought aboard the ship that have, yep, you know, that haven't been on the ship forever and that have recently brought aboard. And none of them are degrading. They are totally in shape. There's no degradation whatsoever. And this is yet another mystery for the crew to solve. We go to Astrometrics and Tuvok, mm-hmm, and Chakotay. They're looking for any interactions that we've had with alien species that may have possibly contributed to the current situation that we're in. Yep. And they're just going through one.
They're just beginning another. This search. Yeah. They start 8 months, 17 days ago, the Kamado first contact. Yeah. But they're just beginning their search, mm-hmm, in Astrometrics, mm-hmm, for a theory. Like, yes, how far back can we go? Can we see?
Yes.
When things, yeah, they're looking for the beginnings of, right, this. Then we go to sick bay and Tom is standing by B'Elanna. He says, how's my old lady? Because, mm-hmm, they just got married. And she basically says, don't ever call me that again.
Yeah.
I'll kill you.
I'm good enough to still knock your block off, basically.
Yes, so, if you, yeah, call me that again. Yeah. He goes through, it's a very sweet scene, very tender. It's a little slow for me.
Do you think that you, okay, as you're watching this scene, do you feel like you wanted to have more emotion? Like in terms of, like, you wish that you had started crying in this one? Or I mean, what is your feeling overall in this scene? I know you're not happy with it.
I'm not really happy with this scene. Part of it is just structural in the writing. Like the, okay, fact that I had to go over, do the romance, then we had to go through, oh my God, she's dying, accepting, yeah, the death, and then the doctor beginning an autopsy, all happening in one scene. And literally I stood in one place. I was like, this was a tough scene I wrote, yeah, down, because it went from this quiet stuff to the romantic phase, to the, mm-hmm, urgent deaths part, to the, mm-hmm, autopsy. And I literally was standing in the same place the whole time. Like, yeah, I didn't like the blocking. I didn't, the fact that, like, I think he would have, if this were in a hospital show, they would have called orderlies in to restrain the person, mm-hmm, who was, mm-hmm, getting emotional, mm-hmm, but we didn't have anybody around. So no. I couldn't get out of control enough to be restrained because there's nobody else there. And, mm-hmm, I don't know. I just feel like the blocking was lackluster. I literally stood in one spot for all of the parts of the scene.
Okay.
I think my emotional level, if I'd gone to tears, there wasn't time for tears. Because the doctor's going, I've got to do an autopsy. And then the fact that I stood there, or I wish he had dragged me away from the bed, or I don't know. I just felt like, this felt like a scene where they're like, we got to shoot this quick.
Yeah.
So let's keep it simple. Keep it simple.
Yeah, I do like the dialogue when you are going through all the honeymoon preparations, though. I do like that because everything you're telling her, she's listening, but you can tell she's fading, like every, yeah, single comment. And it's just, it's very bittersweet, you know? So I don't have a problem with the dialogue there. I do think that that was effective. And I do, yeah, feel like people were like buying into that going, oh my gosh, this is horrible. You know?
Yeah, no, I think the writing was very romantic and, mm-hmm, Mm-hmm. It was very sweet, and there were some really nice moments in it, but it was trying to be a lot of things in this one scene. And I wish we had gotten more specific about the way we staged it and kind of the levels and the turns in the scene and really hit the highs and the lows, because it felt a little bit like, I just wrote down, I think we were shooting this quickly. It feels to me like we sort of kept it simple. Let's get through it quickly.
Yeah.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
But it's nice. There's some nice moments in it.
Yeah.
But she dies. Yeah. B'Elanna does die. Yeah,
she dies.
And the doctor says, we've got to do this autopsy before her cells begin degrading any further and try to figure out what's going on. She dies pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Compared to other people who get this degraded. That's the other thing. I started going, all right, well, if that's how this works, then as soon as we see it on people, they're going to be gone in a couple of scenes. But no, they last for weeks, months, you know? It's weird.
So did you know what was happening yet in this scene? No.
Yes, I kind of did.
You kind of felt it.
Yeah, I started remembering. Oh,
All right. All right.
We go back to astrometrics, I think, at this point, right? Mm-hmm. They do finally get back to the demon class planet.
Yeah. 10 months, 11 days ago.
10 months, 11 days ago. They go through the logs and are reminded of this silver blood that creates duplicates. And you see this all kind of starting to make sense to them, although they don't articulate it in this scene completely. But
no, they're on the right trail.
They're on the right trail. And yeah, so this was, for me, was a turning point. I'm like, I see where
we're going over here. Yes, that biomimetic compound.
Yeah, but this is also where I started kind of, it started losing me a little bit, because that's where I'm like, wait, okay, so we're not really watching Tom and Harry and B'Elanna, and we're watching duplicates, and we've missed a bunch. I don't know where this warp drive came from.
Yeah.
I don't know whose baby that is. I don't know, like, why is Janeway touching Chakotay like this? Did they have a connection that we
missed?
You know what
is so damn funny right now is that you right now, Robbie McNeil, are turning into Tom Paris in this episode.
Exactly.
Becoming sort of like lackluster, lackadaisical. Yeah. Why am I even doing this? Why are we even here? Like, I don't even, this episode is just, I'm not invested in watching this episode any longer. You've turned into Tom Paris.
Like, I know.
Why are we even taking orders from her? Like that.
Yeah.
Why am I even recording this podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, Tom did get very bitter after.
Yes, and you were paralleling your own character in terms of your review of this episode. This is very interesting. All right, so now we're in sick bay, and you know, in come Chakotay and Tuvok, and they're just, you know, they're on a mission. They've got this lead that they think maybe
theory. Exactly.
And they ask the doctor to scan for traces of deuterium, hydrogen sulfate, and dichromates. The doctor's a little perplexed, and he realizes they're all present. All those compounds that they asked the doctor to scan for. The Chakotay says, look, we got to know. You need to inject her with the dichromate catalyst right now. And the doctor, again, perplexed. He's like, okay, he does so. And now she reverts to the silver liquid, to the biomimetic.
She dissolves into a puddle in the bed.
Yes.
I made it.
And it wasn't a total puddle. She looked more like it was sort of
like a sheet of rubber.
Yeah, she was. she looked, you know what it looked like? It kind of looked like, do you remember those fruit roll-ups? Like you would.
Yes,
she's like a silvery, giant silvery fruit roll-up is what she was. So
I made a note here. This was not great VFX to me.
All right.
The melting and stuff, because to do a pure CG puddle of
silver compound. Yeah.
On a three-dimensional real bed is hard to do now.
Yes.
In 2022. It's expensive. Yes. It's a hard CG vis effect. And back then, we didn't have the technology or the money to really do it well.
Yeah.
I wish that they had put some practical, silver compound on the bed so that just the sort of melting and the transition would have left her in a puddle of something real rather than something virtual, which they cut away from very quickly.
Because
it was expensive. That's why they cut away from it so quickly.
Yeah.
The transition was a little bumpy, but I wish in the end they had used some physical elements in this VisiFX shot, because it was just okay for me.
Okay.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Well, we have a passage of time. We're still in sick bay. Janeway is now in sick bay and she's being debriefed.
She's got a lesion on her face.
Yeah, she does. Chakotay suggests that maybe the plan of attack is to head back to the demon class planet. And Janeway, you know, says, okay, well, I want to adjust the environmental controls to simulate a class Y planet to help slow the rate of degradation. So, you know, this is a pretty good theory, I think. Mm-hmm. And she also says, in the meantime, let's search for a class Y planet that we can possibly land on and use that as a safe harbor, because it will probably be to this compound's liking to be on this class Y planet. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we can regroup.
Not a crazy idea, but Chakotay does say, maybe we should just turn around. We're all copies. Let's go back to where we came from. And she does not want to go back.
No.
She's still stuck on, we've got to make it back to the Alpha Quadrant. We got to get to Earth.
Yeah.
So she, they're in search of a class Y planet for safe harbor. Then we go to the mess hall, where she's going to tell everybody. And we see there's some cots on the floor and people are starting to get sick. Harry asks if they're everything about them is fake. And she does say to Harry in here, she says, if you feel something, if you remember something, then it's, who am I to tell you it's not real? It's real then.
Right. Yeah.
That's all I know. Tom's bitter.
Yeah. Harry tries to give his condolences to Tom, and Tom, you know, bitter, bitter, upset Tom.
Tom's like, there's no one here by that name.
Yeah, you're just mean to Harry in this.
Yeah.
You're very mean.
I that's exactly what I wrote down. Tom is mean.
Mean guy.
He was. He's like, drop the good soldier routine.
Yeah.
Tom's bitter. He's angry about B'Elanna's dead. B'Elanna was a duplicate. We're all imposters, Harry.
I think Harry should have slapped Tom like really hard and shaken him like, get out of this funk. We got to do the best we can with what we have. Yeah. Come on, Tommy boy. You know, some little pep talk to sort of, you know, get you out of this. This grief that you're in, I guess you're still grieving over your what, and you're confused too. Right. Tom's just confused, grieving.
What is real?
He doesn't know what's up or down anymore.
Yeah. It's like me watching the episode.
I was confused.
I don't know what's happening here. Who's real? What's real?
Okay, let's
go to Janeway's quarters next.
Yeah, chicken paprikash.
Chicken paprikash.
Chicken paprikash.
Grandmother's recipe.
Yeah.
Then she says, well,
sounds
not
good.
Really, you know, not really my grandmother, but
still tasty.
Still delicious.
Yes, yes.
He does tell her three more people have died. And he asks again, like, I think we need to head back.
We got
to
go back.
Yeah. And he says, home is a class Y planet in the Delta Quadrant. Home is
you
not-
almost said planet. Just like I say plasma.
Plasma.
Ah, okay.
Home is a class Y planet.
Planet.
She does say that she will not kill her crew in the process of trying to get them home. And so we're sort of left in a conflict here with these two. Like he's going, I think you need to reconsider and you need to go back. And she's like, no, we're going home. We're going to figure this out and I won't kill them.
Yeah.
I'm still Janeway. I'm not going to kill my crew.
Right.
And then she's like, maybe this dinner wasn't such a good idea after
me. Yeah. Sad.
JC is falling apart.
No JC moment there.
Nope.
Mess hall. Yep. Doctor has an idea. Find the original Voyager, and then we could sample the real Captain Janeway's DNA and imprint it onto copy Janeway's memetic pattern. This is his solution, which, again, nice theory. It's possibly going to work.
You still got to go back and find the original Janeway. Yeah,
exactly. Where are we going to find original Janeway, for goodness sake? You have no clue.
And the doctor, they don't Fritz, know. No. And the Dr. Fritz is in the scene, so you That's realize right. that his, you know, emitters are starting to destabilize and fall apart.
Even his time is limited as well.
Yep. We go to the bridge. Everybody's getting worse now. The makeup has gone up a notch.
By the way, can I just say real quickly, how on earth did that mimetic compound duplicate the doctor if he's a hologram? You know what I'm saying?
Well, it duplicated his emitters. That's what he said.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay. It duplicated the emitters. All right.
Yeah. It's not him. It's the emitters. Just like the ship.
Copy.
Tom looks okay on the bridge, though, I got to say. Like, Tom's fine down front. He's bitter, but he's fine. Yeah. Janeway's got, like, her makeup's gone up a notch. They put the thing that covers the half of the eye over her.
And now her face is drooping, basically. At least
half of it is. Her face is starting to droop. Her portrayal is like, she's tired. Yeah. Which, again, there's a lack of continuity.
There is, because not everyone did that tired thing.
No.
And I remember there's some scenes where I did talk tired because I guess I kind of fed off of Kate. And there's other scenes where I didn't talk tired. And I was like,
I'm saying. Like that needed some guidance. We needed some, a little bit. We needed a flow chart so that we're all playing the same rules.
Yes.
Because I was not playing anything.
No, except for snarky. That's what you were playing. I wrote that down. Tom is snarky.
But we do approach this planet. There's a vessel approaching that states that this planet is under the Ordmerit mining treaty.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
And we're fired upon. These guys.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
By the way, it's an ugly ship, that ship. Their ship was ugly. It's just an ugly ship.
You know what? You're just all around just down on this episode. I thought that ship looked fine. I have no qualms with that.
It looked like a satellite. It looked like it looked like Sputnik.
No, it did not.
It looked like a Sputnik. Oh, no, it looked old school.
No, you are letting your disappointment with this episode affect everything about your review of this episode. I thought it looked cool. I had no issues with that. It looked like a Sputnik.
No, like a satellite to me. Didn't even look like a ship.
Fine, snarky Robbie. Go ahead. Let's go ahead.
So yeah, they fire.
Well, we have a chance to we could do something, but then Janeway doesn't want to destroy them. Basically,
if we could fire on them, we could whatever we could destroy them. But she says no, we're still Starfleet, even though we're copies. We're still Starfleet. We're not going to kill people. And their ship Voyager, copy Voyager is destabilizing.
Janeway says that she just said we're still Starfleet copies is what she should have said.
Exactly. She says break orbit. Let's get out of here.
Let's go.
Paris has the line where he says, I'm not sure why we're still all taking orders from you.
Look at you. Ooh, you snarker.
Chakotay says, follow orders or get off the bridge. So
you're snarkalicious is what you are.
Yes, Paris does follow orders. Mm-hmm. They do leave. They leave. The Sputnik ship does not pursue them. And Tom's got a line where he says, well, what direction do you want me to go? Am I going backward, right, left? What do you want? He's just bitter.
he's not happy. So Janeway is now with Chakotay in her ready room, and Chakotay is still pleading with the captain. We've got to go back. We've got to go back. And this is the scene where he starts to disintegrate and having weird stuff fluctuating on his face. And
I gotta say, when that happened in any of these scenes, when people's faces started going, that was good VFX. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. I thought it was good too.
I gotta say the good stuff too. That was pretty good. It was hard to watch. I was like, oh, it looked really good.
Yes, it looked good. And so from that scene, we jump to sick bay where we see the passing of our first officer scene. Chakotay dies in that one. We jump back to the bridge, and now there's a eulogy for Chakotay by Janeway. Janeway is talking about how much he meant to her, and that he was able to always call her on her BS, and he was a sounding board and also a very long pause friend. Like she says that at the very end.
There's a
waiting
lot
for
of
something else in there. Yeah.
I feel like I missed a couple pauses at the end of scenes, but this is like, it's this episode was slow for me, and it was partially because of the editorial pace of it.
Okay.
Sometimes we may shoot scenes with all these dramatic pauses, but the editors will tighten it up. So they'll pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one, they didn't. They left a lot of this air in there. And maybe the episode was short.
I was going to say this exact same thing. The episode must have been short. And whenever it's short, they got to find either have to shoot new scenes or extend scenes.
Add a few seconds here, add a few seconds there. It adds up. And I think that's what they did. They just let all these moments play. but I don't know that it was helpful. It was
right. All right. Well, but at this point, because Chakotay passes, Janeway's like, she tells Kim to bring the enhanced warp drive online and to set a course for the demon planet. So she finally caves in. Yeah, we're going to go back.
She does.
We're going
to
go back.
She says he was a fine officer and a friend who wasn't afraid to tell me when I was wrong. She literally, and because that's her way of admitting I was wrong, set a course for the demon planet. Off they go.
Exterior shot of degrading ship, captain's log supplemental. We've lost 63 crewmen. Systems are continuing to fail. And 5 weeks still to get to the demon planet. So it's still a big distance to get back there.
And she does say we've lost the doctor at this point, too.
Yeah.
Lost the doctor. We still have five more weeks to the demon planet. And when we cut inside the, was a briefing room?
Actually, that's where we find out we lost the doctor. So in the briefing room. Yeah.
In the briefing room. I got to say, the makeup is insane in this. It is like full zombie. Like half of Janeway's face is gone. Neelix's hair looks nutty. Seven is degrading too.
Yeah.
But her color is like greener than everybody else's. I don't know if you noticed that.
I did notice that.
Her makeup is different. Green. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ours was kind of black and blue and gray, I guess.
Yeah.
Mostly black and gray.
Yeah.
Hers was green. And then Janeway's face starts moving in this scene.
But she also gives the job of chief medical officer to Neelix. All right. So Janeway's face distorts. And she wants to download the ship's database and personal logs into a signal beacon so there is some record of our accomplishments in case we do not survive. So great plan, wonderful plan. And it's basically, I think Seven suggests that, okay, I can construct this beacon from parts that were not, you know, memetic compound parts, basically.
Yeah. And we can shoot off basically a time capsule.
Yeah, a time capsule.
And Janeway says at the end of this, she says, none of you deserve to be forgotten, which was kind of a sweet moment. I mean, even though I was a reluctant participant in this story, I had trouble investing in these characters because of the fundamental nature that they're copied. It was always hard for me to go, well, if they're copies, I just felt like I knew where it was going. They're copies. Yeah, yeah. They're not going to make it. And we're going to get back to our real people that we really know. So, but when she said, none of you deserve to be forgotten, I was like, I can feel that.
You got pulled in a little bit.
A little bit, even though I don't know these copies at all, their story, all the logs that they're going to send out in this time capsule, even though I don't know any of that, I could feel the sadness of, because nobody deserves to be forgotten.
No.
It's a very relatable feeling.
Yep. We're on the bridge now, and the deflector is offline. Interstellar dust is contaminating the warp field. Janeway says, purge it. Seven says, no, we can't because the exhaust manifolds have disintegrated. So then the command reroute auxiliary power to the deflector, and the warp field almost fails, but is stabilized by Harry Kim. And it's this point that we lose Janeway.
Janeway dies in the captain's ship.
Dies in the captain. She goes down with the ship, basically.
With her boots on. Yeah.
With her boots
on. With her space boots on. She's like a cowboy.
Yes. Sad moment again. And now we have a montage of the ship exterior, corridors, acting captain's log, Harry Kim, talking about the situation is getting worse every day. More than 80% of the ship is uninhabitable, and most of the crew are gone. Now, Harry's sitting on the bridge, and he's asking the computer for hull status. Hull integrity is now only at 45%. Cargo Bay 2 actually decompresses while he's on the bridge. Harry then tries to erect a level 10 force field around the bridge. The computer cannot comply, so he asks Seven for more power. Seven is able to give a little more power, enough for that force field to go in place. It's now surrounding the deck. And Seven says it's, Harry then asks about the time capsule. And Seven says it's ready for launch. But then as Harry commands Seven to launch it, the launch sequencer has misfired. And then Harry says, well, reinitialize it. And then the launch mechanism has now demolecularized. And then the probe itself is gone. But this is confusing to me because I thought the probe was made of material that has nothing to do
with it. It's the launch mechanism. They can't launch it because
so now it's just it's not able to even be. But then they talk about the probe is being they talk about the probe disappearing as well, though. That's what kind of confused me.
Yeah, it's a little confusing. And not to give a spoiler here, because I'm going to jump ahead for a second, but when the real Voyager sees all these little, this debris or the, you know, the goo floating in space, wouldn't they see all the things that like Neelix was showing in the mess hall? Like the things that they collected.
Yes. Some of those items would still be there.
Evidence. Yes. Yeah. Wouldn't all just be this silver goo?
And the time capsule should be there too, basically. So it's a little confusing.
It's a lack of continuity of rules.
And we also detect a vessel 22 light years away. We see it on the view screen, and I can't believe that Harry doesn't go, that's the real Voyager, because even though it's a little fritzed.
It's a little fritzy, but you can tell.
Yeah.
You can tell. Yeah. And so Harry goes down to the con, which, by the way, you sit in my chair. How did that feel?
It felt wonderful.
Was it nice?
It felt
wonderful.
It's a nice
chair.
Yeah, you know, and I was very envious of all the times that you got to move around.
Yeah, because it slides around.
It slides around. It's really nifty. So I had a little fun in that chair, for sure. Harry tries to hail the vessel that's 22 light years away, which is clearly the real Voyager, but the subspace transceiver is malfunctioning like everything else on the ship. And Harry comes up with the idea, hey, we need to go to Impulse to send a message. And we can't even go to Impulse. We're locked. We're locked in this.
The warp drive does not respond to the controls.
No. So Harry says the only other option is to eject the core. So we go ahead and do that. And we see Neelix getting jolted by this. And we see Harry sort of just standing on the bridge in that final moment, which is so sad, really. But evidently some message got through to Voyager, because Voyager is making its way to this stranded
vessel.
It
was a distress call. That's all that they got was a distress call. They don't know who it's from.
No.
More details than that.
No.
But as the ship is tearing itself apart, breaking up, dissolving, all it's the final moments, we cut over to the real Voyager bridge, and everything's calm. Everybody looks great.
No goo, no nothing.
And we don't know when we leave Harry on the copy bridge if they are going to make it or not. So we cut over to the real bridge. Things are calm. You feel like maybe there's a chance they're going to get there in time. But then when they pick up on sensors, the ship, they put on the view screen, and it's just the silver goo.
Just a field of goo everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And so
that they were so close, didn't quite make it. Janeway does make a note of the encounter in the ship's log. Mm-hmm. And she does have an oddly kind of moved moment. Like
she does.
Like she doesn't know what happened, but she's just got a feeling, which is I thought was a nice thing.
I did like that touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. By the way, when they do show the debris, I looked at my face down front and I had one of these faces like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's a bunch of goo. No biggie. It's just like, it was funny. I thought it was good. To me, that was like, yeah, he wouldn't care. He's like, a bunch of goo.
This no what biggie. We.
Yeah, it was funny. And she says, resume course, and off they go. And it's a sad, tragic ending.
It's just
ending.
Sad. They were that close to meeting up with a real Voyager, who they could have, you know, maybe Janeway could have done something, you know. Yeah. So it's very, very sad.
Or at least if they had somehow gotten that buoy, that time capsule,
okay,
they could have had an understanding of what had happened to
these
people.
That would be wonderful. Or if you just saw like that lettuce kind of floating in space that was still there, or some item that Neelix was
the lettuce.
Yeah. Like one piece of lettuce floating in space. There you go. Yeah. What's your lesson behind this episode?
Here's my lesson. There is a lesson here.
Oh, good.
Yes. I think it's the lesson that Janeway Copy learned, which is don't wait until it's too late to change direction. That's a lesson we can
look at you. I love it. I love it.
All right, I'm going to give that to Rebecca, because we were talking at the end, and I'm like, what is the lesson here? And she sort of pointed out that that idea. And I was like, yes, that is a good lesson.
Bravo, Rebecca Jane. Wow. Yeah. Cause I sat there and I was like, I'm gonna let Robbie take this one. Cause I have no, my only lesson was never, never land on a demon class planet. So this would never have happened in the beginning. I mean, I had no other thing to go to, but hey,
it's a good lesson.
I love that. So say that again. Let me say that again. It is.
I wrote it down. Don't wait until it's too late to change your course.
Don't wait until it's too late to change your course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because sometimes you're so intent on one, you see, you kind of have like blinders on where you only see one thing and you're like, I must do it this way. I must do it this way. And everyone else can see that you're going, it's a sinking ship, that this is not the way to go. But the person engaged in the action is so focused on one thing and one thing only that they don't see everything else around.
And it's too late. Sometimes it is too late. Like if you can realize your mistakes, or you can listen to Chakotay and turn around the first time he suggests it.
Yeah.
Maybe they would have made it back.
They would have made it back. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's a good lesson.
All right. Here, what's your rating? Yay. I cannot wait to hear this one from you. Give us a real honest rating for you. Come on. Don't
say 6.2. 6.2 was my original rating. Then I went up to the 6.9, but 6.2 is where I was. There's some really good ideas in here. Mm-hmm. Like independently, there's some good moments and things.
Yeah.
But I feel like for me, the lack of continuity in the rules of what was happening and the lack of continuity in performances by actors, including myself. Mm-hmm. But I think that is true in ways some of the other actors too, that there was sort of, it was, everybody was doing their own thing a bit, their own version of this story. And
okay,
it felt a little disconnected. So,
all right. So 6 point, what? Would you get 6.2?
6.2, yeah.
Okay.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
I feel like I'm going to guess what our captains and admirals are going to go for. I feel like they're going to be less critical. And I feel like they're gonna be closer to around 7.5. That's what I think.
So what are you?
Me personally?
Yes.
I'm gonna leave it at that too. Me personally, 7.5. I like the overall idea of this. I think this is a cool sci-fi idea. I like the fact that, you know, this is a crew of biomimetic compound individuals.
Yeah.
I do like that. And it's very bittersweet at the end. I like some of the other interactions that have happened. So I'll say 7.5 for myself.
Okay. So I got a 6.2.
Yep.
We got a 7.5.
Yep.
And our captain and admiral's average rating for Course Oblivion is 8.1.
Woo-hoo-hoo! Even 8.1. Higher.
One. So this was a very well-liked episode by a lot of the fans.
Mm-hmm.
So, which I get, I think because of the reasons you said that it is a cool sci-fi premise.
Mm-hmm.
There are some really cool ideas and there's some really great moments. There's a lot of, I mean, even from the first scene, like seeing Tom and B'Elanna get married, even though it's a copy, it's cool.
Seeing
Harry playing the clarinet and having fun.
Still cool. Yeah.
Cool. There's some cool stuff. Definitely. There are some cool stuff, but for me, I just kept like Tom, the character, I kept going, what's the point? What's the point? It's copies.
Okay. You know, we're not going to put you through any more pain. let's just keep it going. Let's move it on.
Okay. All right.
So thank you everyone for tuning in to our recap and critique of this episode. And join us next week when hopefully we will have a more consistent episode for Robbie's sake.
Yes. Better continuity, please.
Yes. We're looking for continuity.
Play by the rules. Everybody has to play by the rules.
Join us next week when Robbie and I review the fight. Thanks, everyone. And for the Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. See ya.
Thanks, everybody.